down, I'll pull out my stocking. thank you and good evening. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Say, just a minute, stranger.
Oh, me?
Yes, you. Now, who told you, gave you permission to introduce me? Where's Jimmy Wallington?
Hi, Fred.
Wallington.
Hello, Sam.
How was I, Mr. Wallington?
Oh, you were great, Sam. Here's your 50 cents. You did a swell job.
Thanks, Mr. Wallington. So long.
Look, what is going on here, Jimsy? What is this Sam 50 cents business here?
Well, I've been pretty busy lately, Fred.
Yeah.
I hired Sam to handle some of my small jobs for me.
Oh, that's fine. Introducing me as a 50 cent job, huh?
Well, what is it? Here he is again. Sam could do that to save me a headache.
Now, well, let me tell you something, Mr. Wallington. Everybody on this program has got a job to do. And I want no substitutes. If there is any... Oh, hello, Kenny.
Hi, fellas. What's cooking?
Well, if there's anything... quiet. If you... if there's anything in the air, he just left.
He didn't all go, did he?
No, Kenny, apparently he didn't. Kenny, what do you think? What do you think? Madam. Madam, you'll have to have your carbon ground. We can't. Kenny, what do you think? Let's tell a couple of bad jokes till she sobers up. Kenny, what do you think of an announcer who shows up with a guest announcer to handle, as he puts it, a small job?
Why, that's awful.
Well, it's just what I've finished telling Mr. Wallington. Now, I don't want anyone on this program dragging flotsam and jetsam up to our microphone.
Jetsam?
Yes.
Say, that reminds me, Mr. Allen. Don't miss Mr. Kaporis when he sings tonight.
Kaporis? Where is Kaporis singing?
On this program. I've got a benefit tonight. Mr. Kaporis is taking my place.
You have a proxy vocalist standing by?
Why not? I can make more money paying benefits than I can around here.
Well, that's not the point now. You maliciously changed the subject, Kay. That's not the point. There will be no other substitutions on this program tonight. Now, I just had that all out with Mr. Wallington.
Oh, but can't Mr. Kaporis sing just one song, F.A.?
No.
Just a chorus?
No.
Not one teeny-weeny note, F.A.?
No, and that's final.
Well, all right. I guess I'll have to stay here and sing, then.
That's a must. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Mr. Allen.
Yes, Kenny.
While I'm singing...
Yes?
Can Mr. Kaporis hold my hand?
All right. While Kenny is off to rehearse his cuticle pressing with Mr. Kaporis, we turn to the latest news of the week. Have you got a better fanfare than that, Al? Could I have another one? That one's been used. I can tell a used fanfare. Could we have another fanfare, Al? Another coming up. That's better. The technical news... See, they should rehearse. The second one is always better. Always after this, when they play the first one, let it be just an audition fanfare, and then... The technical news presents its highlight from the world of news. New York City, New York. Severe cold wave that gripped most of the nation and sent mercury tumbling to 20 below zero in the Middle West arrived in New York and New England states during the past week. At Ithaca, New York, the weatherman said...
Temperature 10 above and getting colder.
At Mellows Falls, Vermont...
Temperature 10 below and getting colder.
Greenfield, Massachusetts reports...
Ain't got the temperature yet. Mercury's so low, we're drilling for it.
Similar reports of sudden cold spells come in from many cities and towns throughout the eastern area. Texaco News gets first-hand flashes from several victims of the sudden cold wave. Dr. Ballop, as usual, was first in the field with a cold poll. How do you get your figures for a cold poll, Dr. Ballop?
Well, first I have to assemble my statistics.
Yeah?
I tabulate the wind and the velocity, subtract the precipitation, multiply by the barometer reading, divide by the hour of the day, add 5, that's the Great Lakes.
Well, naturally.
That gives me the mean temperature.
Well, that's only theory. How do you personally know that it's cold, Doctor? Well,
confidentially, I wet my big toe and hang my leg out the window.
The old reliable farmer's almanac method, hey? Well, as soon as you know it's cold, what is your next move, Doc?
I get on the phone and I question people. I say, what do you think of the cold?
And what does your cold poll for this recent spell show, Dr. Ballop?
83.6 of America said brrr.
Yeah?
15.9 said grrr.
And the other 0.5 said?
Hang up, jerk. We thought you was the pot of gold.
But after all, you're not the pot of gold, Dr. Ballop.
Brother, I not only haven't got the gold, I haven't...
Thank you very much. At Oswego, New York, one man who had great difficulty with the cold was Thatcher Spratt. Now, Thatcher...
Sure was cold. I had mittens on over my mittens.
Really?
Yeah, I had to put weather stripping under my zipper.
You don't say. Well, what was this outstanding prank that the cold played on you, Thatcher?
Well, there's a fella up in Watertown, New York, owes me $10.
A business debt?
Nope, he was Wilkie-minded, so I bet him.
Oh, I see. Well, did you collect?
No, so I called him up last week. I called him the day the cold spell started.
What happened?
Lord, it was cold. I picked up the phone and started to say, Operator, I'm calling Watertown.
Yeah?
I couldn't say Watertown.
Why not?
Every time I said water, the word froze in my mouth. I must have spit out 20 cubes.
What do you know?
I finally got tired of spitting out cubes, so I hung up. Lost $10.
Well, that was cold.
I'll tell you how cold it was. I'm a 32nd degree Mason, and I went down 10 degrees.
Well, that's good enough for me, and thank you, Thatcher Spratt.
Wilkie didn't win, did he?
Only in certain states. A young lady who blames the cold for losing her lucrative theatrical engagement is Honey Flanagan. What happened? What happened, Honey?
Well, I'm the leading femme attraction with a boiler cube trick.
Oh, you're with the burlesque show, are you?
Yeah, maybe you heard of me. The Pavlova of 10th Avenue.
No, I haven't. What is your specialty, honey?
I'm a bubble ballerina.
Oh, a bubble dancer?
Say, what I can do with the gossamer globule ain't nobody's business.
Really?
Why, when I trip down the runway manipulating that soap watermelon, brother, I'm out of this world.
You're the last word in grace, huh?
I look like a stem with me grape dangling.
Well, what about this cold spell, honey?
Oh, that's how I lost my job.
What happened?
Well, the day it got cold, I'm doing a matinee. I'm dancing on the runway, manipulating me bubble.
Yeah?
The house has gone wild. I'm dipping, the bubble's dipping. I'm spinning, the bubble's spinning.
Yeah?
A customer coming in opens the front door and a blast blows down the runway.
Cold?
Cold. It's freezing. I'm getting the chills.
But in spite of that cold, you finished your dance.
Oh, yeah. Well, I come off the stage, me tooth is chattering. And the manager's waiting. He fires me.
Well, for what?
He says I'm dancing with 10 bubbles.
Well, how could the manager say you were dancing with 10 bubbles when you only had one?
It was that cold, mister.
You mean?
Yeah. Them other 9 bubbles was goose pimples.
I see what you mean, and thank you, Honey Flanagan. A native New Yorker who was the outstanding metropolitan victim of the sudden cold was one Nero Tremaine. Now... Nero?
Say, you don't mind me wearing this kimono, do you?
Oh, you have to wear the kimono in public, do you, Nero?
Yeah.
On account of the cold?
Yeah, it all comes out as my grueling story unfolds.
Well, what took place?
Well, the other day I'm taking a bath, see? It's kind of warm, so I open the bathroom window.
Yeah?
I'm splashing around in the tub when Zowie, a cold blast blows in through the window.
And?
Whapple. From the hips down, I'm a cake of ice.
Well, how long before the ice melted?
It ain't melted yet.
Why?
Well, the water froze so fast, it pulled the enamel right off at the top.
Well, I'll be...
No ice can't melt with no enamel around it. I'm a walking frigidaire.
And you are doomed to go through life wedged in this enameled ice cake?
Yeah.
Well, isn't it uncomfortable?
Yeah, sometimes my stomach gets itchy.
And you can't scratch it?
Nah, I gotta put a door in or something.
You poor man, what are you going to do to make a living?
What can I do? I'm starting Monday with Ripley.
Good luck to you on your tour, Nero.
You don't want to say that.
No, I don't. No, I don't. But you'll keep a long while in that condition, and good luck to you, Nero Tremaine. While weathermen and forecasting experts are at a loss to explain the sudden arrival of the cold spell, Texaco News brings you the real lowdown. The reason the country has been swept by this unexpected cold wave can be traced to a recent speech by the president. On October 29th, the president said,
"In November, America will feel the first effects of the nationwide drought."
Thank you. And so we go from the cold to Kenny Baker, who is hot tonight. With Mr. Kaporis holding his hand, Kenny sings a song that makes its radio debut this evening. Tonight, this song is being sung on the air by Kenny for the first time. It's called Chapel in the Valley.
Say, Fred, would you have a cigar?
A cigar, Jimmy? What is this? Are you celebrating a blessed event?
No, Fred. I just thought you might like a cigar, so I'm giving you one.
Oh,
go ahead, take it.
Oh, no, something's wrong here. When Wallington gives away a cigar, there is something in the awry. Are you going to ask me for a raise or something?
No, Fred, it's all right. If you don't want the cigar, I'll give it to Goodman.
Oh, no. Rather than that, I will take it. Hey, have you got a light?
Why, sure, right here. I've got a match right here now.
Say, that match went out.
Yeah, that was a dud. Here, I'll try another one.
Another dud.
That's right.
I get it. You didn't give me this cigar to smoke, James. You are using me to demonstrate a dud. You, I understand, are an authority on duds.
Yes, Fred. There are many kinds of duds. When the engine of your car answers the starter, sputters, goes dead, it can be a sign of duds in gasoline, too. Duds are the worthless parts of gasoline, the sluggish, slow-action elements that are a drag on your engine, a drain on your battery. That's why Texaco removes these gasoline duds by a vital step in the refining process. The duds are out of fire.
Still, Al Goodman and 15 men who have walked with Rachmaninoff ever so slowly have just played I Got Plenty of Nothing, and for good measure, it ain't necessarily so. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Oh, come in. Mr. Allen?
Yeah, what is it?
My answer is yes. Goodbye.
Hey, what was that? What was that? Well, I'm going to catch that guy. Hey, sound man, open that door, will you? Hey, you!
Yeah?
What a business. I say, sound man, open that door, and a guy 20 feet away opens the door. Then I yell, hey, you, and a fat actor who's been standing next to me all the time says yes.
I beg your pardon, brother, you called me.
Are you still in character?
Certainly.
Then I called you.
Yes, sir.
Well, what inspired you to come barging in here? I'm minding my own business. You come rushing in. You say, Mr. Allen, I reiterate, what is it? You say, my answer is yes, and leave. Now, what was that?
Well, last week your announcer said, are you using Texaco gas?
Well?
My answer is yes. Goodbye.
At least he could have come in a car. I mean, I ought to rent myself out as bait for a psychopathic war. If I could get all of the crumbs that show up at this microphone together, I could open a free lunch for sparrows that would reach from here to Passaic. I have more...
Hello, Mr. Allen.
Well, for me. Gesundheit.
Thank you.
Is there a draft in here? Do you feel a telltale zephyr when I open my mouth? You know what a zephyr is with the tea in it? It's a zephyr that blows through a tea shop and picks up the tea as it's passing through. Did you feel a zephyr?
No, but I caught a cold last Sunday.
You did? You overtook it or just caught at a football game?
No, I was listening to Jack Benny.
Yeah.
He was coughing and sneezing on the radio. I guess I caught it from him.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. I heard Benny Sunday. What a show. Entertainment. 15 Gesundheits and 3 commercials.
Jack didn't even mention your picture.
I don't think you'll hear anything more about Love Thy Neighbor out of Benny.
Why not?
Well, I understand that he saw the picture run off at the studio out in Hollywood last week, and when the picture was over, Mr. Freeman gave Benny the key.
What key?
The key to the cutting room. So that Benny could get a load of himself on the cutting room floor. Benny is so good on the floor, they tell me, he's had 3 offers from the Johnson Wax people.
You mean Jack may be through in pictures?
Well, if he is, it serves him right. A guy with that middle-aged spread trying to be a Mickey Rooney. What does Benny want with those cupid bow lips and that flea-bitten toupee? John L. Lewis has got more hair in one eyebrow than Benny has got on his own.
Jack doesn't need hair. On him, skin looks good.
That guy living out in Hollywood with his mother-of-pearl incinerator, he certainly lives high for a low life. Benny is so low, he can read by the light from a hot foot. Well, that's Benny's quota for tonight. Now, who's our guest, Portland?
It's Major Bowes, Amateur of the Month.
That is correct. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we present a little lady who Major Bowes feels has one of the most remarkable voices he has ever brought to the microphone. I would like to have you meet at this time Miss Adelaide Bishop. Well, I was going to send a man out to give you a piggyback in, Adelaide, when you didn't show up. You tired?
No.
You're not, aren't you, really?
No.
Crush your heart?
Crush my heart.
All right. Well, good evening, Adelaide.
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
How old are you?
I'm 11.
11 years old. You don't mind me calling you Adelaide, do you, Adelaide? Would you rather I called you Miss Bishop?
No, Mr. Allen. Major Bowes called me Adelaide.
Oh, I know, but the Major is a much older man than I am, Adelaide.
That's funny. He doesn't look any older than you do, Mr. Allen.
That child needs glasses, that's all. But before... And when you get your glasses, get the bifocals on top so you can look up at people. But before we start, Adelaide, may I tell you how much I enjoyed your singing on Major Bowes' program?
Thank you.
You know, for a little girl, your voice has a remarkable range. What type of singer would you say you are?
I'm a coloratura soprano.
A coloratura soprano. At the age of 11, you are jousting with the most difficult of all vocal calisthenics. Well, how do you account for your unusual voice? Was your mother a singer?
Yes, mother was a coloratura, too.
Ah, that explains it. And your mother has started you taking vocal lessons?
Yes, I've been studying for 2.5 years.
And who is your teacher?
Louis Polanski.
And what does Mr. Polanski say about your singing, Adelaide?
He says if I'm a good girl and practice hard, someday I may sing in grand opera.
Well, are you only interested in operatic music?
No, I like swing music to listen to, but not to sing.
You're strictly long hair in every sense of the word, aren't you? Well, what are your favorite operas, Adelaide?
Personally, I prefer Rigoletto, Lacmé, and Lucia de Lammermoor, and the other coloratura roles.
Well, Adelaide, Major Bowes and I both predict a brilliant future for you, and we hope your operatic wishes come true and that you will have a long and successful career in the world of song.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. And I want to thank Major Bowes, too.
Well, I'll wake him up and tell him as soon as I get through here. You're entirely welcome, Adelaide. And now, what are you going to sing for us?
The bell song.
You know, most little girls, 11 years old, Jimmy, you ask them what the bell song, they think it's something the Good Humor Man wrote. But, hey, Jimmy, you're just the man I want to see. Now, you're an expert on motoring. I'd like to get your opinion on a big idea I'm kicking around.
Oh, it sounds great, Chief.
Well, why don't...
Now, wait a minute. Don't give me that Hollywood reaction.
Okay, Chief, what is the big idea?
Well, I have thought up a way to beautify all those highway warning signs. You know the signs that say stop, go slow, it signs like that.
Well, how are you going to beautify them, though, Fred?
Tear them down, Jimmy. Now, instead of these warning signs, I'd put up big animated electric signs. You know, like a 100,000-watt replica of Hedy Lamarr.
Well, what sign would Hedy Lamarr replace?
Danger, soft shoulders. What do you think of my idea, Jimmy?
Well, it's terrific, Fred. There's just one minor thing the matter with it.
What is that?
It won't work.
Well, why not?
Because there's one highway warning you can't replace, Fred. I mean the danger sign you can't see.
A danger sign you... Well, what sign is that, Jimmy?
It's the bite of cold in the air. The frosty breath on your windshield. And it says, much colder weather ahead. So don't delay. Get Texaco's five-way protection.
Here was late for rehearsal this morning.
Oh, no, I was pretty busy.
He was very late.
Well, I'm not interested, Portland. Now, ladies and gentlemen...
But Teddy was almost half an hour
now,
late.
Now, Portland, please.
That's pretty late.
Well, I'll grant you that. But what can I do about it? The child labor laws protect Kenny. If I do anything to Kenny, the quiz kids will probably go out on strike. And I don't want any pickets around here with their voices changing. Now, just let's forget about Kenny.
But Kenny told me to tell you he was late.
Oh, he did?
Yes, and Kenny told me to tell you that he hasn't got a watch.
Oh, is there anything else he wants me to know?
Yes. There are only 19 more shopping days to Christmas.
Now, look, Portland, when you see Kenny, you can tell...
Say, Mr. Allen.
Yes, Mr. Goodman.
Kenny Baker was late for rehearsal.
I have the misfortune... You took it a tone higher, this show. I have the misfortune to know all about that, Mr. Goodman.
You also know Kenny hasn't got a watch. And to Christmas, there are only 19 days for shopping left.
That also. That also I know, but not quite in that order.
You know all that?
Yes. And if Kenny wants a watch, he can take it up with Santa Claus direct.
Does Kenny believe in Santa Claus?
Well, I wouldn't know how.
I, as a kid, believed in Santa Claus.
And what do you believe in today?
The bylaws of Local 802. And the rights of the American people.
But what has that got to do with Santa Claus?
Mr. Goodman, Portland, is the king of non sequitur. He is the originator of the isolationist sentence. Nothing Mr. Goodman says is relevant to anything that has been said, is being said, or will be said.
If that's a bawling out, and you're asking who can take it, I'm answering Goodman.
Fine. A different interpolation. And my answer to that is...
Leave it, Mr. Allen. Here comes Kenny.
Oh, gee.
Hello, Mr. Allen.
Hey, hello, Kenny.
Well, what do you know? I'm late again, huh?
Oh, well, that's all right, Kenny.
Gee, if I only had a watch, I could tell you how late I am.
Don't worry about it, Kenny.
Well, I'm overdoing it.
No.
Did Portland tell you I was late for rehearsal this morning?
Yes, Kenny.
Did she tell you why I was late?
Yes, Kenny.
Well?
Well, what?
Well, Merry Christmas, Mr. Allen.
Now, look, Kenny, this isn't the Benny program. I know that on that show, you were trained to do your Christmas hinting early.
Who's hinting, Mr. Allen?
Well, with all this talk about being late, no watch, and Christmas...
Oh, I only mentioned Christmas on account of my Christmas card.
Oh.
I wrote one for everybody.
Oh, you composed the Christmas verses yourself?
You bet. Look at these cards.
Oh,
latest one, Kenny.
Okay. Here's a verse I dedicated to my Uncle Phil. Oh, Uncle Phil, with heart so full of Christmas spirit and good wool. If your nephew buys a watch, Uncle Phil... Will you pay the bill, Uncle Phil? You will?
That is sentiment and bad timing.
Well, you said to wait for last.
That was last week, every other week, and not every week. That is sentiment?
It sure is, brother.
That is brazen hinting for a watch, if I ever heard brazen hinting for a watch.
Well, I think it's beautiful, Kenny. Have you got another one?
Oh, you bet. This one's for Mr. Goodman. You want to hear it, Mr. Goodman?
I'm all ears.
You certainly are.
Now, this is no time for flattery, Kenny. Just read your card.
Yuletide greetings, maestro mine. Boy, oh boy, how you keep time. For you, the orchestra with love is full of us. Brother, can you spare a boulevard? Would you like that, Mr. Goodman?
Yes, you can mail it to my old address.
I suppose that boulevard is sentiment in there. That isn't hinting.
Well, I'll leave it to Porty.
It's pure sentiment. Kenny, you're a genius.
Thanks, Port. And to show my appreciation in advance, I wrote a card for you. It's very romantic.
Oh. Gosh, read it, Kenny.
All right. Merry Christmas to you, Porty, and season's greetings for 1940. On this program, the rest are fools, but you stand out like 17 jewels.
Again with the watch.
Haven't you got a verse for Mr. Allen, Kenny?
No, I don't know. Sir.
Oh, you bet. This has a special sound effect.
Well, I don't.
All right, eh? Hark, Mr. Allen, that was a chime. That's how people without watches tell time. I'll think of you Christmas while the clock is tick-tocking, and I'll hang up my left wrist instead of my stocking.
Kenneth Baker, aren't you ashamed of yourself? Making a hollow mockery of Christmas Day, the holly, the mistletoe, the Christmas spirit, what do they mean to you? Nothing. You just want to watch.
Yes.
Well,
shame on myself.
I should say so.
I'm a bad boy.
You certainly are.
Yes, after all, watches don't grow on trees.
My brother-in-law got one off a fence.
Quiet. Quiet, Mr. Goodman.
Mr. Allen, do you know what I'm going to do?
What?
I'm going to tear up these Christmas cards and buy everybody Christmas cards with sweet, unselfish sentiments on them. And when February comes, I'm going to mail them out.
Christmas cards in February?
Yes. I'll put a little note in with them explaining.
Explaining what?
I'll just say, sorry this card reaches you so late, but without a watch, do I know what time it is?
Now, I will tell you once and for all what time it is, Kenneth Lawrence Baker.
I know. It's time for my song.
Right. And a set of Encyclopedia Britannica is on its way to Kenneth Lawrence Baker, General Delivery, Box 4. whose next number, first time I knew my mouth wasn't big enough for my tongue to get out. Kenny, whose next number is Pale Hands I Love.
Take my case next.
Your case?
Yeah, my wife beats me. She's been beating me for 3 years.
Well, what program do you think you're on?
Ain't this the Goodwill Court?
No, it isn't.
Am I a dope?
Yes, I think you have hit the nail on the head, frankly.
Well, what am I going to do? My wife beats me.
You mean she uses a baseball bat or brass knuckles?
Oh, no, not Mabel. You see, the thing is, we're a two-car family. She's got a car and I got a car, see? Every morning we go out to the garage together. She gets in her car and I get in mine.
Uh-huh.
But by the time I get my car started, hers is always out of the driveway and 3 blocks down the street.
Oh, so that's why you say...
My wife beats me.
Well, I tell you what I'm going to do for you, friend. I'm going to turn your case over to a higher court. I pass you on to my colleague, Judge Larry Elliott. What is your verdict, Judge Elliott?
Well, my verdict is that the gentleman should do what the lady in the case has obviously already done. Namely, change to Sky Jeep. The luxury gasoline.
Luxury's okay for my wife, but I balance my budget.
Ah, but this luxury isn't expensive.
Now, the Texaco Workshop Layers. Tonight, they present a mystery melodrama. It is case number 247¾, taken from the secret files of the great international detective, Fetlock Bones. This case is called Death Comes to the Mystery Story Writer, or Cheez-It, the Corpse. Music...
The great detective Fetlock Bones needs no introduction to our audience. The crime has yet to be committed that Fetlock Bones has failed to solve. In 1927, Scotland Yard, after working on the case of the dynamite muffin for 20 years, gave it up. The mystery was solved when Fetlock Bones said...
Your deduction that there was dynamite in the muffin Lord Busby bit into is incorrect, Watson, old boy.
Then how do you account for the fact that Lord Busby's head was found in the attic, his legs in the cellar, his arms out on the lawn, and his torso sitting in the wine closet?
Elementary, Watson. Lord Busby had a nervous breakdown. He simply went to pieces.
Amazing.
In 1931, when confronted with the great Zipper mystery, Pinkerton threw up his hands. The Zipper mystery was solved when Fetlock Bones said...
Gladmore Sutro was not murdered. He committed suicide.
Look, Fetlock, the bullet hole was under the Zipper in his smoking jacket. The Zipper was closed.
Right you are, old boy.
Well, after he shot himself, how could he close the coat Zipper?
He didn't.
What then?
Gladmore opened the Zipper in his smoking jacket to shoot himself.
Yeah?
His head slumped forward. His goatee got caught in the Zipper.
And?
When rigor mortis set in, his head snapped back, closing the Zipper. It's an open and shut case, old boy.
Amazing.
In 1939, when called in on the baffling case of the poisoned bloodhound, the thin man went back into pictures. The poisoned bloodhound case was closed when Fetlock Bones said...
The bloodhound was not poisoned, John Edgar.
Then how did he die, Mr. Bones?
Business had been bad in this pet shop.
Yes?
The owner couldn't afford to buy red ink. He's been dipping his pen in the dog.
And the bloodhound?
Expired of anemia. Elementary, old boy.
Tonight, December 4th, 1940, another mystery stumps the world. Mr. Moto has given up. Mr. District Attorney has resigned. Superman has passed the buck. The FBI has finally appealed to Fetlock Bones. Fetlock Bones at this very minute is standing outside the door of a Park Avenue penthouse, pulling his peaked cap down over his eyes, removing his magnifying glass from his Boston bag. The great detective Fetlock Bones is ready for action. He knocks at the penthouse door.
Mr. Bones, at last you've come.
Rather, I took a taxi and ran all the way.
You took a taxi and ran?
Yes, the blasted taxi started before I got in.
Well, you've come just in time, Bones. I was putting in a call for Basil Rathbone.
Well, you can't solve a mystery by transcription, old boy. Well, I shall get to work. Now, who are you and who's been done in?
I'm M. Lincoln Rooster, the publisher. My best-selling mystery writer, Ellery Spleen, has been murdered.
Where was he shot?
In the penthouse right here.
And the circumstances? What are the circumstances?
Spleen was giving a dinner party for a few author friends. We were celebrating the publication of the new Ellery Spleen mystery story.
Carry on.
After dinner, Ellery began to read us the final chapter of the book. He had just come to the last line. As Ellery read, "The murder was committed by," there was a shot. Ellery slumped over, dead.
These are the circumstances?
Yes, I ordered the other authors into the rumpus room until you got here.
You found the gun, old fig?
I searched everybody. Nobody in that room had a gun.
Sounds interesting. I should like to see the body, old boy. If it's receiving, of course.
Yes, he says right here. Ellery died in the living room.
Stubborn, I say.
This way, Bones.
Righto.
There he is.
I say, who's this blighter bending over the body?
Sorry, sir. I'm Buggins, the butler, sir.
Well, don't disturb the body, Buggins. You might destroy a clue.
I'm giving the master his liver pill, sir. It takes him on the hour. I've got strict orders, sir.
But it's futile to give a dead man a liver pill. A liver can't live on alone as a rugged individualist, you know.
I'm taking no chances with the master, sir. It might be playing possum, sir.
I don't care if he's playing pisha-pisha. Withdraw from Exhibit A, Buggins.
Right, sir. I shall get back to the cuckoo clock.
The cuckoo clock?
Yes, I'm repairing kit, sir.
Right, you are. I say, Rooster, a stack of books here adjacent to the body.
Oh, these are autographed copies of Ellery's new mystery novel. These are the only 10 copies printed so far. He intended to present them to his author guests after dinner.
Don't see here, Rooster. I refuse to stay in that upper room another minute. I am leaving.
Who is this person, Mr. Rooster?
This is Dr. Fumfit, Mr. Bones.
Yes, I'm Dr. Fumfit, and I've got to get away. I've got an important operation.
If you're a doctor, old Fump, what are you doing at an author's dinner?
I'm also an author.
Oh, an author, Doctor.
Yes. I wrote memoirs of a doctor, Odyssey of a doctor, Confessions of a doctor, Station Wagon Doctor, Station Wagon Without a Doctor, a Doctor Without a Station Wagon.
If you're a doctor, why didn't you give first aid to Ellery's spleen when he was shot?
Me? What do I know about medicine?
You say you're a doctor.
Yes, but I've been so busy writing doctor books, I've forgotten my profession.
Oh, I see.
Now, out of my way, Cad. I have to go and put in an appendix.
I say you have forgotten medicine, haven't you? One doesn't put in, one takes out an appendix.
I'm putting this appendix in, fathead.
Your...
It's the appendix to my new book, How to Win Doctors and Influence Nurses. Let me go, if you will, please.
You can't go. I am Detective Fetlock Bones, Dr. Pumfret.
Well, very interesting, very interesting. Well, good night, Mr. Bones. I'll take my autographed copy of Ellery's book. I'm shot.
Good heavens, I'll call a doctor.
Too late. I just diagnosed myself. I'm dead.
That's right, he is dead.
Any good doctor, I should say, diagnosing so skillfully.
Where did that shot come from?
Well, I heard glass shotter. The bullet was fired through the window. Where does this window lead, Buggins?
To the terrace, sir.
Very good. We shall barge out and overpower the murderer. Lead the way, Buggins.
Sorry, Mr. Bones. I've got to the fairest cuckoo clock. I'll go with you, Bones.
Carry on, Rooster.
I'll open the door.
I say, Trull, who are you?
I'm Myrna St. Vitus Fink.
Is this creature an author, too, Rooster?
Myrna St. Vitus Fink is the great surrealist poet.
And also possibly a part-time murderer?
Oh, no. No, I didn't kill Ellery Spleen, I swear. How could I kill Ellery? I loved him.
Then why were you hiding out here on the terrace, short, dark, and lumpy?
I had hidden a surrealist love poem in Ellery's vest. I was waiting for him to find it.
Myrna, you were in love with Ellery.
Could I help it? I'm a surrealist. Not, am I?
If this person's poem is in the body's waistcoat, Rooster, her alibi is in order. Let us adjourn to the body.
Come in, Myrna.
Here we are. This bulge in spleen's upper waistcoat pocket. I say it's the poem.
Yes, my poem.
Read it, Bones.
I shall. It is called Surrealist Surrender. Celery, Ellery, Ellery, Celery. Cupids on the grass are lark. Pigeons, hop-toads, neck on necking. Will it, Ellery, come to pass?
No, it can never come to pass. Alas, alas, to pass.
Please control yourself, Myrna.
No. I'll join Ellery. I'll end it all. I'll go out and eat some cafeteria crab meat. That will do it. No. I shall die with Ellery's book clutched to my breast. I'll take my autographed copy of my lover's book. Oh, I'm shot.
Well, I'll be...
Move over, Ellery. Here I come. Oh.
Dead.
Good heavens. Just as you reach for the book.
I say, Mr. Bones, this other window is broken.
Don't tell me, Buggins. I'm the detective.
You know, it's getting gruesome in here with these three bodies.
Yes. Frightfully lumpy underfoot, too. I say, Buggins, neaten up a bit.
I'm repairing the cuckoo clock, sir.
Bother the cuckoo clock. It's getting frightfully untidy here. You might stack the bodies in the corner, if you will.
Yes, sir. I shall stack the master first.
What was that?
Sorry, sir. I seem to have dropped something, sir.
A pendulum.
Yes, sir. It's from the cuckoo clock, sir.
I shall examine that cuckoo clock. Ah, I thought so. Buggins, I arrest you for the murder of Ellery Spleen.
You're balmy, if I may say so, sir.
Yes, Buggins had his back to us, Bones. How could he shoot anyone? You heard the windows break?
That was me clue, Rooster.
The shots didn't come through the window?
Definitely not. Buggins fired the shots. To divert our attention, he threw parts of the cuckoo clock through the window.
I think I should pop out for a short meander about the rookery.
Overpower him, Rooster.
I say you're dislodging me, Dickie, sir.
Quiet, Buggins. Bones is deducing.
And conscientiously, if I do say so, Rooster. Buggins, you fired those shots.
How can I fire the shots, sir? I've no gun.
No, but you've rigged up this cuckoo clock as an infernal machine.
But, sir, I...
You've removed the entrails of this cuckoo, Buggins. You've mounted the cuckoo on a revolver barrel. The cuckoo's leg you have fastened to the trigger. When the cuckoo popped back, the cuckoo's leg fired the shots.
Is that right, Buggins?
Yes, mercy, Mr. Rooster.
Why, you...
Please, sir, you're elevating me, Dickie. Scotting me windpipe.
Are you prepared to make a statement, Buggins?
I confess, Mr. Bones, you've caught me with me cuckoo down.
I knew it. Buggins.
But I only meant to pip off the master, Mr. Bones.
Ellery Spleen? Why?
It was those murder mysteries he wrote. They all ended the same way. The butler did it. The butler did it. I told Spleen if he wrote one more book where the butler did it, I'd kill him. He did, and I did.
But the others here, Buggins.
I killed them to keep them from taking copies of that butler smear and tripe out into the world. I've saved the honor and prestige of the butlering profession.
Straighten your dicky, Buggins, and let Sir pop along.
Will I get the chair, Mr. Bones?
I doubt it, old boy. Anyone who eliminates four authors today is doing mankind a favor. These dead authors here have fulfilled the ambition of every writer today.
Meaning, sir?
They've made the Spook of the Month Club.
Oh, very good,
quite
sir.
Good. Let's... Ladies and gentlemen, it is a far cry from comedy to culture, but as a comedian, I'm getting a real thrill tonight by presenting the most famous voice of radio's cultural side. It's a voice that has long shepherded the world's great music across the killer cycles and brought countless hours of enjoyment to millions. It is, in fact, the voice of Milton Cross.
Thank you, Fred.
Mr. Cross, I know that you have a message of real importance. May I... extend to you the hospitality of our microphone.
Thank you very much, Fred. Ladies and gentlemen, last Monday, the Metropolitan Opera Company opened...